This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Bottom of the hour, Saturday morning, you're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290. Drew Mandel, Dave Manuk, Ezra Ginsberg with you in studio. The Jets and the Devils, 2 o'clock this afternoon, puck drop at Bell MTS Place. You are going to have Hustler and Rick right after us. They're live at Boston Pizza City Place as part of Winnipeg Jets Game Day. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
Pleased to welcome to the program from Sports Illustrated, Alex Pruitt joins the show. Alex, good morning. Thanks very much for joining us.
Good morning.
Alex, I brought you on to take a look-see around the NHL. I want to start with you in Tampa Bay, where the Lightning just continue to roll 8-1-1 over their last 10 games. Now, 15-2-2 on the season. They defeated the Dallas Stars 6-1 in their last game on Thursday night. Is there any reason from your perspective to not think that the Tampa Bay Lightning, assuming that they can stay healthy, are going to represent the Eastern Conference and be the Stanley Cup favorite going for, from now going forward?
Of course, it's hockey. You never know. I mean, this is a team that's run into injury, bad, really, really bad injury luck in the past. So, you know, that shoe could drop. But at the same time, no, I mean, this is the best team in hockey right now. Stamkos, Kucherov, and Nemesikov are an absolute delight to watch on that top line. And when you get them out there with Hedman on the power play, it's certainly even more dangerous. But, I mean, look, this is a team that I think a lot of us probably thought were going to be right in that spot again last year until they ran into some of that injury trouble. But they were there for 2 years in a row before that, and a lot of the same horses from that year are here and arguably better. You know, Stamkos, his comeback story is pretty incredible so far, and Kucherov is certainly rounded out into probably a top-10 player in the league right now. And, you know, we mentioned the complimentary piece there in Nemesikov and the job he's done, and, you know, it's not overlooked the job Steve Yzerman's done in locking guys long-term. I mean, Tyler Johnson's on the books for only $5 million for the foreseeable future. Palat, same deal. Stamkos, same deal. You know, Kucherov's going to get paid soon, but I assume he'll work his magic there, too. And so this is a core that's going to be together for a long time, and they're certainly, off to a hot start. I don't see any reason why they shouldn't be the favorites, at least at this moment.
Alex, you used to cover the Washington Capitals for the Washington Post, and arguably the last two games have been the low point of the season. They've given up 12 goals in losses to Nashville and Colorado. In your opinion, is this team just not good enough defensively right now?
I mean, arguably in the last decade or so, I mean, they haven't given up consecutive 6-goal games in regulation since 2005, so essentially before they got good in the Ovechkin era. So it's been a long time since that happened. Look, they've had some injury issues as well. I mean, Niskanen was carrying a big load for them before he went down, and everyone's had to kind of reshuffle accordingly. John Carlson's, I think, leading the league at time on ice, or was for a stretch there. I've thought just from watching them that their defensemen have actually acquitted themselves decently well given the circumstances. Some of the young guys like Christian Juice and Madison Bowie have kind of gotten over that early rookie hump, I think. Brooks Orpik's probably looked as good as he's looked in a Caps uniform. And, you know, there's a guy who's playing on the third pairing last year, probably shouldn't be expected to carry a big load in the playoffs. But for now, I think they'll make do with him. Look, they haven't gotten a heck of a lot of scoring. Their top two lines, the Backstrom and Kuznetsov line, have kind of been hit or miss. And, it has all kind of snowballed. They have not played well at all in front of their back goalie, Philip Grubauer. I think he's 0-5-1 with a 3.86 and right around .875 save percentage. They need to get more when they're playing in front of him. At the same time, they've scored first in, I think, 6 out of their 20 games as well. So, they're falling behind early. And without some of, without at least the level of offensive weaponry they had last year when they had, you know, the Justin Williams and Marcus Johansson and some a little more veteran pieces there, they're finding a little harder to get over that hump.
Alex, Cam Atkinson signed a 7-year, $41 million contract on Friday with the Columbus Blue Jackets. Not too shabby for a sixth-round pick from 2008. What do you like about the signing from both the player's perspective as well as the team's?
Well, for Cam, had a chance to write about him last year. He's put up consistently better and better goal numbers every single year. I think three straight 20-goal seasons, and he explodes for 35 last year. He's an all-star. He certainly earned his money. Like you said, a six-round pick is doing pretty well for himself. I like Columbus, locking up guys at cost-effective numbers. You would think, I think Cam's still making 3-5 this year, and then, to get him underneath six, I think is pretty good. This will be probably his last major deal as it gets him into his 30s. I think we forget that he's 28 right now. That's how you build, right? That's what we've looked at in Tampa Bay and in other places that, in this era, in the cap era, you need to have cost-effective contracts for the long term. With guys like Atkinson and Venberg and Seth Jones, locked up into the next decade, I think they're liking where they are.
Alex Pruitt is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Alex is with Sports Illustrated. Alex, later this afternoon here in Winnipeg, it's going to be the 11-4-3 New Jersey Devils facing off against the 11-4-3 Winnipeg Jets. Are the Devils the surprise story of the NHL season thus far? We know that they were getting younger and getting more talented just with the addition of Nico Hischier and the addition of Will Butcher. But at 11-4-3 so far this year, are they the surprise story to your mind?
11-6-1 Las Vegas with a fourth string goalie would like a word.
No doubt about that.
Yeah. He's in the Eastern Conference probably. I think if you look at their underlying numbers, there's some reason to suggest that there's a regression coming. I think they only have three players in the black right now in possession, shot attempt differential at even strength. But there's a lot to like. I think this is probably way better than anyone even there would have expected that they were going to be, that atop the Metro right now, heading into Thanksgiving. But there's a lot to love. Taylor Hall is I think what everyone thought he was and thought what he could be on a team like this, leading the team in scoring right now. And he sure has certainly acquitted himself well as a rookie, as has Butcher on the back end. A guy like Brian Gibbons is probably not going to shoot 32%, and he has 8 goals in 18 games right now. So that's things like that are probably going to come down. It's still a building year for them. They still have Schneider locked up for the long term on the back end, so they have a window here. I think this is probably just the start of it, and given especially some of the cap situations they have on the blue line, it would suggest that Ray Sciarro can go out and get some pieces down the road if he feels like he can kind of round out with what's looking to be a pretty good core up front. They're fun to watch now. This is no longer neutral trap in New Jersey hockey. They're running and gunning under John Hines. I think once maybe they get a few more pieces, and that's a product of drafting forward pretty heavy over the past couple of years. But signings like Butcher help, and if they can go out and maybe get a free agent or two in the future, this is a team that's probably going to be in contention at the very least for a playoff spot.
Alex, as you can imagine, a lot of talk here in Winnipeg has centered around Thursday night's game and the incident that happened in the first period with Radko Gudas slashing Matthew Perreault on the back of the head. He got a 5-minute major and a game misconduct. How many games are you expecting Radko Gudas to get for that incident a couple nights ago?
Oh, I don't know. I don't have a very good handle into that, especially the new regime under Perreault over there. But it was ugly. Gudas has a history of finding himself in this sort of hot water as well. I don't know what the bar is for this. I don't know what they're looking at. I would certainly expect a decent number of games, right? He gets the in-person, so that allows him to suspend for 5 or more. I would certainly expect it to be higher than that.
Yeah, also because of his previous history, too.
Alex?
Yeah, like I said, yeah.
Each draft year, we always know about the top picks, but the more intriguing players to a lot of us are the diamonds in the rough who are taken late. You wrote about 3 seventh-rounders who were picked in the same draft playing the same position. How have those guys defied the odds, and just how important is it for organizations getting those players who you don't expect to really develop into an everyday NHL role?
Oh, sure. It's huge if you hit, right? You can hit on a guy when that, expectation curve starts to kind of grow a little bit or starts to shrink. so to speak, on the, you know, the further you go in the draft, the lower the odds are that the guy makes it. So if you can hit on, you know, one in the fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh, and he develops into a guy like, for instance, the Jake Gensel, huge part of what you can do as an organization. So, I mean, look, that story just started randomly enough because I noticed that three guys from the same round in the same draft who play the same position on the same side happened to be getting a rookie run at the same time. We're talking about San Jose's Joakim Ryan, Anaheim's Jacob Megna, and then Washington's Christian Juice. So it just kind of was born out of that. And, you know, let's look at some of these guys' stories. And, like, you know, like every seventh rounder, they were probably didn't attend the draft and they were at home wondering if they would get picked or not. And I think some of them would say, you know, maybe they were even looking forward to the opportunity of being a free agent and getting to choose their destination. But there is something special to them and just having, you know, their name pop up on the computer screen or wherever they were watching it. And then, you know, having that become part of your path, especially when you do make it, it makes it all that much more rewarding at this point.
Alex, as you know, the NHL GM meetings are taking place right now in Montreal, and some of the discussion has centered around goalie interference. Do you think the review of goalie interference, the interpretation of goalie interference, I should say, should be something that the NHL looks at more seriously and changing that rule next year?
As in making it stricter or making it looser? Or
I would say stricter.
Yeah. I don't know. That's something I haven't honestly taken too close of a look at. I'm all for getting calls right. I am not necessarily all for sitting there and waiting for a heck of a long time while they sort this stuff out. But that's the trouble that you run into when you create a challenge for what's largely a subjective thing. Especially because of how fast things move in the crease and how much, you know, people are shoving each other down there. It's hard sometimes to get a definitive read. And if the answer to that is making a stricter rule, then if that'll speed up the process, then sure.
Last question for you, Alex. You know, heading into this year and with the Matt Duchene saga continuing to drag on, a lot of people thought that Joe Sakic had maybe overplayed his hand and wasn't going to get as good of a return as he ended up getting for Matt Duchene. When it's all said and done, I mean, did we maybe underestimate Joe Sakic and the level of return that he was able to get for Matt Duchene?
Well, I think we're properly estimating it now that he's gotten a return. I thought that was a pretty good job by him to score was it a first, second, and a third, and
prospect,
you know, I think Kamenev, Kamenev, Girard. I mean, Girard's looked pretty good.
Shane Bowers,
and Bowers. So it's just that's four decent prospects. Hammond's probably a depth goalie piece, and three picks for sending out a guy who has been pretty vocal about how much he wanted to be traded, which, you know, as an organization, that doesn't put you in the best bargaining spot of power. So, yeah, no, I think everyone did a pretty good job there. I kind of like the trade for all three spots, to be honest.
Alex Pruitt covers the NHL for Sports Illustrated. Alex, appreciate your time this morning. Thanks for joining us.
Yep, take care.
Take care, Alex. When we come back, we preview this afternoon's Jets-Devils game. That's coming up next. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show as part of Birchwood Honda Winnipeg Jets Game Day on TSN 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Ten minutes before the top of the hour, welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. This segment brought to you by Bernstein's Deli, official deli of Illegal Curve Hockey and home of the Illegal Curve Sandwich. Located in the Cordon Village Mall, Bernstein's Deli has been Winnipeg's deli destination for over 30 years. For more information, find them on Facebook or at bernsteinsdeli.com. Remember, if you're looking for a place to watch this afternoon's game, Bernstein's Deli's got all the big screen TVs. They got great food and drink specials. It's hashtag Hockey Night at Bernstein's. Check it out, bernsteinsdeli.com, for more information.
Except today will be Hockey Day at Bernstein's.
It's true, but, you know, okay, fine. Thank you for just stepping all over me there, Ezzy. Jets and the Devils this afternoon at Bell MTS Place, a 2 o'clock puck drop, a game you can hear on TSN 1290 and watch on TSN 3. Trevor Kidd doing color with Dennis Bayak on the
love
broadcast
it. Love it.
This afternoon. Yeah, and then Munsey and Edmonds will do the call on radio this afternoon. two surprising teams. I guess the Jets, you know, have all the talent, and people were just wondering when they'd be able to put it together, and they're 11-4-3. And then you look at the Devils, a team that certainly was up and coming just by default of being getting your first overall pick. You expect to be up and coming, that of course being Nico Hischier, but they are definitely a surprise 11-4-3 thus far on the year, Ezzy.
Yeah, and you know, you heard Paul Maurice talk about it yesterday. This is a very quick team. I would argue that the Devils are a much quicker team than the Philly Flyers. And you know what's probably the most surprising about the Devils is where the goals are coming from, because I think it's very different than the Philly Flyers. The Philly Flyers are very top-heavy, right, with Sean Couturier's line, which features Claude Giroux and Jakub Voracek, and then you've got Wayne Simmonds on that second line. The New Jersey Devils have been getting goals from all different sorts of players, and you saw last weekend Miles Wood had a hat trick and 4 points in a win against the Chicago Blackhawks, a game in which the Devils came from behind. And you know, a guy like Brian Gibbons, who's a career AHLer, he's got 8 goals. The biggest difference for me this year, Drew, is they have more speed from the back end, and Taylor Hall is playing like a top 10 left winger, like he did, you know, 3 or 4 years back with the Edmonton Oilers. Taylor Hall has been unbelievable. He's the unquestionable MVP of this team so far, and that's to take nothing away from Corey Schneider. Corey Schneider didn't have his best year last year, but he's been fantastic, and Keith Kincaid has been giving them pretty good goaltending in a backup role as well. So, you know, this Devils team is really surprising, and, you know, like you said, Drew, you expected the Devils to be better this year just because they were so bad last year, but, mm-hmm. you know, you see a lot of depth up and down the lineup, and Travis Zajac has only played one game yet this year, and they were able to survive without him in the lineup, and, you know, it's really, to me, a question of depth, an issue of depth, and, yeah. and really, you know, some unexpected performances. Jesper Bratt is another guy, a rookie forward, who was taken late by the Devils. He's got 13 points in 18 games.
Sixth-round pick, I believe, if I'm not mistaken. And you mentioned Travis Zajac. He played his first game of the year on Thursday night in Toronto, where the Devils lost 1-0 to the Leafs.
But, Dave, with the infusion of Nico Hischier up the middle and Will Butcher on the back end, this is a much more talented team. It's a much more fast team. And, you know, it could be a playoff team this year if they keep this up.
And credit to Coach John Hines. I think he's really got them playing very well and got them within his structure, which is not the traditional New Jersey Devils structure that we're used to, which is that really, really defensive kind of sit back, as Ezzy touched on. There's a lot more speed to this grouping now. So it's an interesting team to watch. They've obviously hit a bit of a slide in their last three or four games. You know, they've had some injury problems, but
2-2-3 in their last seven.
Okay, so there you go.
But I guess the point is, though, that they're still getting those points.
Yeah,
you know, they've lost 5 of their last 7, but they got points in 3 of those, and they got the loser point in 3 of those games.
And the reality is, I don't know how many people at this point in the season had the New Jersey Devils as the top team in the Metropolitan Division.
Probably nobody.
Right. I mean, they've still got 2 games in hand on Columbus, and they're tied right now points wise with Columbus and Pittsburgh. So it's a very exciting team, and it's a team that, again, I think, as he touched on in his answer, many of us were expecting to take a jump, but not the way they have so far this year.
It's really, you know, I mentioned it, and, you know, Dave mentioned some of the injuries. Marcus Johansson's out of the lineup. He's been out of the lineup for over 2 weeks now, and he mm-hmm. was a guy, you know, that you expected to play a top six role. And that's, to me, what's most impressive. And sure, the Devils have struggled a little bit in the last couple of weeks, but, you know, they're still right up there with the other teams in the Metropolitan Division. And, you know, up and down the lineup, you know, when you have Nico Hischier, Travis Zajac, and Brian Boyle as your top three centers. Brian Boyle obviously, you know, missed the early part of the season, but, you know, they've had Adam Henrique on the third line wing, and, you know, at times last year you had Adam Henrique centering the first line, right?
Mm-hmm.
So there's just much more depth on this team, and I think that's always a good thing for a coach. And John Hines, by the way, I think is the most underrated coach. And sure, you guys know I'm a Devils fan, but look at what he's done with this group, right? Travis Zajac and Brian Boyle both missed the early part of the season,
mm-hmm.
and they've still maintained a winning record. Not only a winning record, a pretty good record. And, you know, Will Butcher was an excellent signing by Ray Shiro, and they're getting excellent goaltending, which you expected from Corey Schneider. So overall, it's been a great start, and, you know, there's still, you know, another 60-plus games left in the season. But right now, I think the start to the season couldn't be better for the Devils.
Yeah, you mentioned Corey Schneider. He's 7-3-2 on the year, a .924 save percentage and a 2.64 goals against average. Sort of Corey Schneider-like numbers after last year was a bit of a down year for the Devils goaltender. Even found himself a little bit in some trade conversations conversation this offseason. I don't know how serious that really ever should have been taken, because the Devils without Corey Schneider just, I mean, they don't, you know, Keith Kincaid's having a, you know, a bit of a down year, so I don't know if the Devils were going to go goaltending-wise. Corey Schneider, clearly their long-term answer in net. Sort of an interesting phenomenon when you look at these two teams in that they're both 11-4-3, but if you look at their Corsi percentages, they're both towards the bottom of the league. In fact, at even strength, so all even strength situations, the Jets are 29th in the NHL at 45.5%, and the Devils are 30th at 45.4%. So these are two teams that do not have very good Corsi numbers as they do battle against each other this afternoon, coming in with 11-4-3 records. So sort of a bizarre situation. I guess if the puck is loose, neither team is going to try and get at it.
Right, and what's the equalizer? The equalizer is goaltending, right?
Yes.
And we know that it's still a relatively small sample size, right? So if, you know, the Jets and Devils are bottom of the league in Corsi towards the end of the year, that's a much bigger problem than it is, you know, 18 or 19 games into the season. So, you know, it's a problem for the coaches. I mean, coaches want their teams to have puck possession and all of that, but, you know, so far it hasn't been a problem. But, I mean, the Devils, that's the biggest difference right now between last year and this year. I mean, it's a much more skilled team. It's a much faster team, and it's not a team that you only have to shut down one line. They can hurt you from three different scoring lines, and I think that's what we'll see tonight. It should be a great game. I mean, a lot of similarities between the Jets and Devils with the skill and the excellent goaltending that they get from Connor Hellebuck and Corey Schneider, two American goaltenders, of course. And, you know, it's nice to see, because let's be honest, you know, it's been a rough last couple years for this Devils franchise.
Yeah, it's really since they made that surprising cup run back in, what was that, 2011?
Oh, against L.A.?
2012 against L.A. It's been many a slim picking for the Devils since then there, Dave.
I think, well, Ezzy and I were at the draft in New Jersey where, you know, Corey Schneider got traded. The one time Gary Bettman wasn't being booed on the stage, you're going to like this one, he said to the crowd.
Yeah, he was being booed, and then he said
you're going to want to hear this one. Yeah. And honestly, the building kind of erupted because, you know, they knew the quality of the goaltender they were getting. And fans here, of course, are familiar with Corey Schneider from his days with the Manitoba Moose. But the truth is that I think he came into the season with a big chip on his shoulder, knowing that he hadn't had a good year last year with all the talk of, you know, maybe the downgrade in his play. And you know, fans in New Jersey are getting a chance to see what he can do for them. And as he touched on it, you know, the you know, good goaltending can cover up some team warts. And you know, at the end of the day, while, of course, you want to have that puck, the most important stat is the, you know, the wins in the bank and the points, or if you're not getting the wins, at least the points in the bank to kind of keep you on that upward trajectory of making the playoffs. But, you know, eventually you've got to figure that out, which is what you have the luxury of doing when you're not chasing, when you're not trying to get into the playoffs, trying to fix that. So the goaltending is covering some things up, perhaps for both squads. But again, I think there's still opportunities in the season to kind of get that fixed. But again, like I said, that's less important because you have the goaltendings playing the way they are.
Yeah, Taylor Hall certainly playing well for the Devils. You mentioned him. He's had 10 points in his last 10 games. So is Nico Hischier, averaging a point a game, 7 points in his last 7 games. So those are the two players playing together on that top line for the Devils that the Jets will definitely be keying on in this afternoon's game.
Yeah, the Devils are obviously led by Hall and Hischier. Those are the two best players. But up and down the lineup, we talked about, I mean, that third line, Adam Henrique, Brian Boyle, and Miles Wood has been really good. They've been contributing offensively. And Brian Gibbons, to me, I love those stories of kind of the journeyman American Hockey League players. I believe he's 27 or 28 years old, late 20s nonetheless. And, you know, he's had just a great season. We mentioned it, 8 goals so far this year. He's a guy that, you know, you didn't expect much of. You expected him to play for the American Hockey League affiliate of the Devils. And, you know, he's been a great story.
And we certainly had his opportunity in Pittsburgh playing alongside Crosby when Ray Shiro was general manager there. Couldn't get it done. So he goes to New Jersey where Shiro's the GM. John Hines, of course, was the former head coach in Scranton, Wilkes-Barre for the Penguins. So a lot of familiarity. Is obviously a comfortable situation for Brian Gibbons.
29, but nonetheless, he's a late bloomer.
But certainly. As he's right, it's a great story. I mean, he hadn't played in the NHL in 3 years.
Yeah.
And his last season was 2014-15 with Columbus. And then he comes up and plays with this organization in 18 games. So those are, as he's right, really good stories.
A reminder that the Santa Claus Parade and the Jets game are happening pretty much at the same time. I believe the Santa Claus Parade starts at 5 o'clock and the street closures start this afternoon at 1:30. So you should probably head down to the arena now if you want to get a parking spot for the game or take your helicopter, because it's going to be, I think, a little bit of a chaotic scene this afternoon in downtown Winnipeg with the Jets game and the parade both occurring, or the Jets game letting out at the same time as the parade beginning.
And of course, Drew will be Scrooge again this year.
Naturally, that's what I do best. When we come back, our good friend Amanda Stein, she's with the New Jersey Devils organization as their beat reporter. She joins us next. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Hour number three of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show starts now on TSN 1290. Drew Mandel, Dave Manuk, Ezra Ginsberg are with you in studio on this beautiful Saturday morning. The Jets and the Devils doing battle at 2 o'clock this afternoon. Between now and then, of course, you can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. You can reach us in studio via text message. Send your text to 1290. Standard messaging rates do apply. And our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news is illegalcurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
Making her triumphant return to the program, although no longer representing our sister station in Montreal, we're pleased to welcome back to the show our very good friend, Amanda Stein. Amanda making her first appearance in Winnipeg. Amanda, how is our fair city treating you thus far?
Well, they let me off the plane, so that's number one.
That's a good sign.
I know I've made some comments about Winnipeg before, so I was relieved to get off the plane. And I will tell you that it is not as cold as I thought it would be. And so I was very pleased about that.
Amanda, have you gone to the Palomino Club yet?
I have not. I don't know what that is, and I'm kind of scared to answer this question.
Yeah, it's a nightclub not far from where you're staying, but I assume the team's flying out right after the game, so you probably get a pass on not visiting the Palomino Club on this trip.
We went to the Pint last night, which was very nice. A bunch of us from the team went and had a really nice night. So I actually enjoyed myself in Winnipeg, so I take back all those terrible things that I used to say when I used to come on with you guys when I was with TSN 690 back in Montreal.
Well, Amanda,
I've now officially been here.
There you go. You've officially touched down in Winnipeg, and you're now an honorary Winnipegger or some sort of nonsense like that.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Amanda, you're clearly a good luck charm for the New Jersey Devils, as they are really one of the most impressive and surprising teams to start the year, 11-4-3 for the team thus far. And we had your colleague Matt Lachlan on earlier in the year when the Devils were off to the hot start talking about the team, and really they've slowed down a little bit. But they're getting points, and that's really what matters most, is that they haven't necessarily won as many games as they did at the outset of the year, but they're still getting those points. They took they got an overtime loss in Toronto on Thursday. So it is, the Devils continue to lead the Metropolitan Division. I don't think anybody would have thought that at the beginning of the year.
I think what the biggest difference is, and of course I didn't cover the team last year, but I did a lot of research when I joined them, and I think one of the biggest differences this year is that there is some sort of consistency in their game. They play the same way every single night, which is something Coach John Hines really wanted the team to buy into and to accomplish. And whether you win the game or lose the game or in whatever fashion that happens, it's about the process for this team. Did they do enough in order to give themselves the best chance to win? And if they can say at the end of the day or at the end of a game that they did do that, they consider it a successful day for them. You have to keep in mind that this team is extremely young, a lot of rookies who are making a big difference on this team, who are going to go through ups and downs with the rigors of the NHL season. So as long as they're sticking to the cliche of the process within the game itself, Coach John Hines is really pleased with how things are going. And on top of that, they're managing to win games and pick up points and sitting atop their division. I don't think Coach Hines has any problem with how things are going so far this season, even though you're right, there's been a bit of a dip in point collection over the last couple games.
Amanda, I think you'd agree there's no shortage of great stories on this Devils team. Brian Boyle definitely comes to mind. But when you're talking about Brian Gibbons, 29 years old, a kind of a career AHLer, and he's got 8 goals in his first 18 games, I mean, is this really kind of emblematic of the Devils' season so far?
I think it is, because who would think that Brian Gibbons would be the leading scorer or the leading goal-getter for the New Jersey Devils at this point in the year? I certainly didn't, and I will admit I didn't know much about him going into this season. But I think this is the other thing that you can see from this team. When you have someone like Brian Gibbons, and then you have Taylor Hall, who's leading the team in points, you have Nico Hischier, who has the second most points, you have Will Butcher, who's collecting assists all over the place. There's just a balance in this lineup that allows every player to be who they are and not anything more than what they, you know, what they can play to. They don't have to try and do more. They can just be themselves because everybody's contributing. And I think the biggest problem last year that they got into is that players were trying to do too much because maybe the talent level wasn't exactly there right through the lineup. When you think about, you know, having Travis Zajac come back, that bumps Nico Hischier down, that bumps Brian Boyle down, that bumps Adam Henrique down, and all those things just goes to show how much depth this team has in their lineup that they can count on.
Amanda, one of the most important players for any team is the goalie, and we know how important Corey Schneider is to the Devils. Has he been playing with a chip on his shoulder for the way his season went last year?
I think he's been playing with a blank slate. I think the way things ended last year was just so easy for the entire team and for Corey Schneider to say, that was last year, this is this year, and I'm starting new. And not only is he starting new, but he's starting new with Coach Roland Melanson, who was his goalie coach back in Vancouver. They brought him in this year. They've been working together. And I think it's just been really easy for him to put everything that happened last year behind him because it went so terribly and just focus on, again, I hate myself, I think I've been around the NHL too much, around the process of just playing one game at a time. And he's been dialed in. He's been their best player night in, night out. He was fantastic against Toronto on Thursday night, unfortunately with 2.2 seconds left, giving up that last goal that did look like it was tipped in. But he has certainly been a really bright spot for this team.
Amanda Stein is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Amanda is a beat reporter for the New Jersey Devils. You can read her work, of course, on the team website at newjerseydevils.com. Amanda, Travis Zajac made his debut on the season on Thursday night in Toronto. Of course, the Winnipeg boy or Winnipeg-born player will come home tonight, this afternoon, to play against the Jets. What does the addition of Travis Zajac, how important is that to the Devils organization and the Devils' plans going forward?
Extremely important because he's a player who plays 5-on-5, plays well defensively, can pick up points, can play on the power play, can play on the penalty kill, and is excellent at the face-off dot. So really, I list 6 things that are really vital to being an all-around forward, and that is who Travis Zajac is. He is a complete forward, and so he gives them, and he's an older guy, which is really important because there are so many young guys on this team that were leading the way. It's, you know, we can't forget that it's important to have the older guys around the locker room showing the young guys how, you know, what it is to be a young professional. So I think he also brings a lot off the ice now, being able to be around the guys. This is his first road trip, to just be there, be a presence. Everyone knows in New Jersey who Travis Zajac is. And so to have that back in the fold is really, really important to this group. Not even, you know, not just on the ice, but off the ice as well.
Now, Amanda, you mentioned the importance of Travis Zajac's leadership. How important has it been to have Will Butcher's speed on that back end? Because I think you'd agree, I know you were still covering the Canadiens last year, but this was a group of defensemen that kind of lacked that foot speed last year.
Yeah, it was. It was definitely their Achilles heel was their defense last year, absolutely. Will Butcher has been an anomaly. He comes in as advertised. He's speedy, he's smart, he has a good shot, he's picking up assists. And I think the main thing is that he's a very smart player. He sees the game really well. So he's not going to necessarily get you a ton of goals. In fact, he's waiting on his first NHL goal. But he's able to see the plays develop almost before they do. And that's sort of a Travis Zajac-like quality. I know they play different positions, but just being able to see things before they happen is so important, especially when you have, you know, when you're on the power play and need to make quick decisions. He's very sound in that aspect, and very young and is only getting better and better. And he is a guy who I had a chance to sit down with him for our podcast. And he talked about joining the New Jersey Devils. He was lucky because he was a free agent before having ever played in the NHL and got to choose New Jersey. And he said the coaching staff and their belief in him and what he could do was one of the main reasons that he decided to come to New Jersey. And so we're seeing that really pay off now. The trust that they have in him only breeds confidence in him even more.
Amanda, I was reading an article about Devils GM Ray Shiro, and he's quoted as saying, our fans can see the vision we talked about 2 years ago, infusing this lineup with younger players. You know, you're someone who interacts with people on Twitter, and especially the fan base. So what is the feeling amongst Devils fans about their team right now?
I think Ray hit the nail on the head there. People are excited. I think there was like a reluctance at the beginning of the season to really believe that this is the direction that the team was going, because they came out to such a hot start. But they also, you know, we can't forget they did that last year and then they had this major collapse. I think there's a certain belief in seeing a rejuvenated lineup, having Nico Hischier, the first overall pick in this year's draft or this past draft, all these little things, these incremental things, and the fact that they've been consistent has really fired up the fan base. I didn't know what to expect when I joined the Devils. I didn't know what it was going to be like at a home game. I've been so lucky to cover the Canadiens for so many years, and I just thought it was normal to sell out a 22,000 arena. I didn't know what it was going to be like when we went to New Jersey. And the fans have come out. They've been super supportive. There are Jesper Bratt jerseys everywhere. There are Nico Hischier jerseys everywhere. So everyone's believing in this young core that's coming up. So everyone's taking Ray Shiro's words and rolling with it.
You know, Drew, pardon me, Amanda.
Drew.
Drew mentioned...
Whoa.
That's an insult.
No, I meant to say Drew mentioned earlier that, you know, you've been a good luck charm. I'm just thinking, you know, is it a coincidence that the Habs are struggling right now and the Devils are playing so well? I don't know if that's a coincidence.
I don't think it's much of a coincidence either, let me tell you. You know, I leave and everything starts falling apart. I'm going to take the credit for what's happening here in New Jersey, and I'm going to take the credit, although I guess it's not credit,
blame
for the downfall in Montreal. But you would definitely not be the first person to point this out. I think from the beginning of the year when Montreal came off to such a difficult start, that was one of the first things that kept coming through my Twitter feed. It's like, where are you? We need you back. It's because of your lines. Like, you don't write our handwritten lines anymore. That must be it. And I said, you know what? I've been with the Devils now for 2.5 months, and my heart is with the Devils. I'm just looking out for them, and Montreal's going to have to find their own way out of it without me.
It's all about the penmanship, clearly. That's what the Habs are lacking
clearly.
Right now.
Uncle Leo himself would be proud of Amanda's penmanship.
Amanda, I'll let you go on this last question. You know, it's sort of an interesting dichotomy in today's game in that the Jets and the Devils are both off to such hot starts to the year, but both are struggling so much in the possession side of the game. Both in the, you know, the Devils are 30th in the NHL, the Jets 29th in terms of possession. From John Hines' perspective, the coach of the Devils, is that something he's paying attention to? Is he talk about the team's possession numbers, or is, you know, winning and the good record really sort of covering up everything else?
I don't think John Hines is that type of guy where a record is enough for him to let the little things go, or even, I guess, big things when you're talking about possession. But I think he's more worried and has been about their compete level, because with compete level comes possession. And so that's what he really stresses in practice. I mean, the other day in practice heading out to Toronto, he wasn't pleased with how things were going. Here's a little anecdote about how things are in New Jersey. He wasn't pleased with the compete level in practice, especially in the defensive zones. And so he literally stopped practice and was like, do you think that this type of defense is going to stop Matthews? Do you think that this type of defense is going to stop Nazem Kadri? Do you think this type of and he literally like almost went through the entire New Jersey entire Leafs lineup. So he's really focused on compete level, and I think with that, all those things like possession comes.
Amanda Stein covers the New Jersey Devils. You can read her work at the team website. She's a very good friend of this program.
Amanda, one more quick question. Who's winning Movember right now, Matt Lachlan or Ken Danico?
You're going to get me in trouble. well, on my podcast, I talked badly about Matt Laughlin's mustache, so I have to give it to him now because he called me out for calling him out. So I'll give it to him. But you never want to get on Kenny's bad side, so I'm going to go with it's a tie.
Excellent job hedging your bets. Very political answer. Well done. Amanda covers the New Jersey Devils for the team website.
Let's have Amanda on for the next hour.
Amanda,
I would love that.
Yeah. Well, next time, Amanda, how about that?
Sounds good to me.
Okay, we'll see you at the rink later this afternoon, Amanda. Thank you.
Looking forward to it. Bye, guys.
Take care. That's Amanda Stein of NewJerseyDevils.com. She covers the Devils, a former good friend of the program. When we come back, latest edition of Insider Trading. Is the NHL about to arrive in Houston, Texas? That's up next. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Minutes past the hour, you're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. This segment of the show brought to you by our good friends at Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, officially declared the funniest place in Winnipeg by Illegal Curve Hockey. For 30 years, Rumors has been bringing Winnipeg the best in stand-up comedy. To purchase tickets or for a list of performers and showtimes, visit RumorsComedyClub.com tonight at Rumors, his final night in town. He's been playing to sold-out shows the entire week. John Doerr in town, two shows tonight, 7:15 and 10 p.m. You've seen him on Conan O'Brien. You've seen him all on Just for Laughs. You've seen him all over the comedy world. John Doerr at Rumors tonight. Tickets available, rumorscomedyclub.com.
And shout out to our boy Benji Rothman, who was at Rumors last week.
There you go. Benji Rothman doing some good stand-up comedy at Rumors as well. The insiders from TSN got together for another edition of Insider Trading. This is what the gentlemen were talking about.
Split location edition of Insider Trading. Darren Dreger and Bob McKenzie alongside Pierre LeBrun joining us from the Bell Center in Montreal. Houston Rockets owner Tillman Fertitta says he's very interested in bringing an NHL team to Houston. What's the likelihood of that actually happening?
Well, the National Hockey League and Fertitta met recently, and they talked about the possibility of Houston considering an NHL franchise, be it expansion, relocation, as some want to think. This was really a gathering of information, and I'm told that in that meeting specific to the National Hockey League, there wasn't a defined interest, but the statement that was put out by Fertitta makes it clear that he's at least interested in continuing to pursue the possibility and the ongoing process. Now, there are some who want to link Houston, maybe Seattle, to the ongoing speculation around the Arizona Coyotes and possible relocation. But I'm told that the Coyotes and the National Hockey League are currently working on yet another arena process.
The current expansion team, Vegas, continues to be a good story. They've come down to earth a little bit. But we know, Bob, they're all about the future. So are their best players likely on the move sooner rather than later?
Not necessarily, although George McPhee, the general manager of the Vegas Golden Knights, is most certainly getting a lot of calls right now about two scoring forwards who are pending unrestricted free agents. That would be, of course, James Neal and David Perron. Both their contracts are up at the end of the year. And the presumption has always been these guys are likely to be auctioned off as rentals between now and the deadline. And that may well happen. But the fact that so many teams are looking for scoring help right now means that McPhee's phone has been ringing off the hook about whether he's ready to move these guys. At this point in time, unless somebody absolutely blows his socks off, that's not likely to happen. Maybe something that he would look at down the road between now and the deadline. And he also allows for the possibility of maybe talking to these guys about contract extensions, although there's been nothing done on that front.
Centennial GMs meetings in Montreal. That's one of the reasons Pierre LeBrun is there. One of the sort of off-season issues, Marion Hossa's injury, Joffrey Leupel's injury, there are some questions. The NHL said both were legit, but some lingering questions the GMs will discuss on that, Pierre?
Yeah, that's right, James. There is a GM that asked for this to be on the agenda, which means that NHL Deputy Commissioner Bill Daly will have to walk them through it. And I talked to a couple of GMs today that are happy that it's on the agenda because they still aren't 100% comfortable or clear as to how Hossa and Lupo meet the criteria and why the Leafs and the Hawks respectively get salary cap relief. Now, I think they're going to be disappointed with what they hear, because I think what Bill Daly is going to tell them is that, listen, these guys are physically unable to perform. So therefore, as per the CBA rules, the Hawks and the Leafs can put them on LTI. But clearly, still some GMs who want to hear this from the horse's mouth.
IIHF President Renee Fassell was in Toronto for the Hockey Hall of Fame induction, says he's done after his current term in a couple of years. And could there be a familiar face replacing him?
Right. There could be a North American, which might come as a bit of a surprise to all those who follow the IIHF. And that is Bob Nicholson from the Edmonton Oilers ownership group there. Now, Nicholson, as we know, longtime president of Hockey Canada, has been around the IIHF for a number of years now. He would be considered a global candidate. There's likely four or five candidates who would be considered, but Nicholson would likely be in that group.
Ever since Zdeno Chara became a star, teams have been looking for another Zdeno Chara, a giant who can play. Tampa Bay thinks maybe they might have one?
Well, you never know. I mean, 2 years ago, they drafted Oleg Sosunov, a 6'9" defenseman from Russia, who's now playing as a 19-year-old for Moose Jaw in the Western Hockey League. And he's turned a lot of heads. He scored 6 goals this season. And when you're 6'8", 6'9", at age 19, you're going to draw a lot of attention. But what it also underlines is how all-in Tampa has been on Russian players. You got Kucherov, you got Vasilevsky, Nemesnikov, Sergachev, but they've also drafted a lot of guys. Most recently, they had their second round pick Volkov, their third round pick Lipanov. It's not surprising with Steve Yzerman, his experiences in Detroit with the Russian five there.
And Toronto has Soshnikov, who's in the lineup on Thursday night, had it in his contract that he had to be called up by this time to be with the big league club or he could go back to the KHL. He's not the only prospect that has that, Pierre.
No, Jacob Yerbeck, the defenseman with the Laval Rocket, the HL farm team of the Montreal Canadiens, he has it as well. Now, his trigger date is December 15th, which is to say the Montreal Canadiens have until then to either call him up or he can decide whether he wants to go back overseas. Now, I think he obviously wants to be with the Montreal Canadiens, and he's played well. He's got 11 points in 14 AHL games. Mark Bergevin and Claude Julien were there in person to watch him last night. So the problem for the Habs, well, it's a numbers thing. They've got a lot of defensemen, and so they'll have to make room for him if they do indeed decide to call him up or try to convince him to stay in Laval a bit longer. We shall see.
Insider Trading from TSN Hockey.
That's the TSN insiders with the latest news from around the league. I think the big takeaway there is Tillman Fertitta and his desire to have an NHL team. Yeah, no kidding. And his desire to have an NHL team in Houston. You got a billionaire. You got an arena he owns. It's going to happen. I mean, this is just a matter. The only question, I suppose, is it a relocated team or is it an expansion team? Because I think if you're the NHL, by the way, Quebec's going to get screwed on this again. But I think if you're the NHL, you look and you say, Arizona can't continue where they are. They just, I mean, there's no more money to be stolen from the taxpayers in Glendale. There's no arena imminently being built anywhere other than Glendale. So you move the Coyotes there. You give an expansion team to Seattle. Done. You got your 32 teams and then you got your balanced conferences.
Andrew, you mentioned Quebec City, and I think all of us here would love to see Quebec get an NHL team again, right? But, I mean, you have three cities right now and no franchises that are going to be relocated, and you expect maybe that it's going to be an expansion team, but you have Seattle, Quebec City, and now Houston wanting an NHL team. As you mentioned, Drew, Tillman Fertitta has a lot of money. He's a multi-billionaire, and we know that that Toyota Arena that has almost 18,000, I think it's got 17,800 for hockey, it's ready for an NHL team to either move there or for an expansion team. And people forget that Houston has a long history of hockey with the International Hockey League and the Howe family playing Gordy with his
sons. Yeah, Houston Arrows were one of the marquee teams for a long time.
So it is a hockey market.
It's the fourth largest city in the U.S.
Well, I was just going to mention that. I believe the Houston area, the Houston, greater Houston area, I should say, has, I think, 5.5 million, Drew. So it's a big, big area.
You have a built-in rivalry immediately with the Dallas Stars. You have somebody who's got billions of dollars who wants to own an NHL team. And historically, if you have billions of dollars and you want to own an NHL team, you're going to get an NHL team.
And I think, you know, people hate to hear this. And we're not saying, by the way, you know, that this means that Quebec isn't going to get an NHL team eventually. We're just saying that when you have a TV market that big, and as you mentioned, you have the ownership in place and you have the arena in place.
Yeah.
I mean, it looks like, you know, the possibility of the NHL coming to Houston is getting more and more realistic as each day passes.
Well, I think what you're going to see is because the arena is built and it's ready and it's there. Arizona's got, I think, another year left on their lease in Glendale. When that's done, I assume that they just finally ends. They move the Coyotes move to Houston. They need to build that new arena in Seattle. So maybe that's where the expansion team goes, is to Seattle, because they need the couple years of leg time to get that arena built. And then Quebec, the only question about Quebec is, does the ownership situation in Carolina get resolved? And does what happens with the arena situation in Long Island as they're trying to build a new arena? Because we know they're not going to be playing at the Barclays Center for too many more seasons. So that's really where Quebec's best hope comes from, maybe a relocation. But really, I think the expansion team goes to Seattle and the Coyotes relocate to Houston. It makes too much sense for it not to happen. But then again, that's the NHL, so that's probably why it won't happen.
And Drew, I think you'd agree we're at least 2 years away from an expansion team or a possible relocation to any of these cities, at least 2 years.
I mean, the Coyotes still have another year left on their lease, so unless that they mutually dissolve that lease, that might be a little too quick in time for next year. But I do think that it's going to happen. There's too much money. Big owner wants money. They want it in Seattle. They want a team in Seattle. They want a team in Houston. It tends to happen that way, Dave.
And they had AHL hockey up until 2012-2013 season, and the Arrows were, you know, attracting a number of fans. They had 7,300 on average the season before they left, and almost 6,800 the season they averaged the season that they left Houston. So we know that they're a strong hockey market, and Ezzie's right. It goes all the way back to the Howe days. But, you know, to me, it's an interesting one, right? Is there enough of that market, and you know, is it, you know, saturated with sports, or can it handle hockey? And is the interest in hockey going to get to that NHL level versus the AHL level? You know, we'll see. I mean, maybe we could ask Tyler Myers, a Houston-born NHLer, what he thinks about the opportunity for NHL hockey to be played in Houston.
Well, there you have it, something to keep an eye on, but I think it makes too much sense for it not to happen. We'll see over the next couple of seasons. When we come back, we'll take a look around the prospect world with Chris Peters of ESPN.com. He covers all sorts of up-and-coming players that will eventually make an impact in the NHL. Chris is up next. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Saturday morning, you're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. Drew Mandel, Dave Minuk, Ezra Ginsberg with you in studio. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. You can reach us here in studio via text message. Send your text to 129090. And, of course, you can find the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news on IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
Pleased to welcome back to the program from ESPN.com, Chris Peters joins us. Chris, good morning, and thanks very much for joining us.
Hey, good to be with you. Thanks for having me.
Our pleasure, Chris. Always appreciate you you coming on the program to talk about prospects. Chris, in your most recent rankings, you had American defenseman Quinn Hughes ranked third overall. You watched him play last night for the University of Michigan against Wisconsin. What stands out to you the most when you watch Quinn Hughes play?
Yeah, well, obviously, you know, we're talking about a very skilled defenseman, a kid that can do pretty much whatever he wants on the ice, it seems, when he has the puck on his stick. And, you know, he's undersized, and that has never held him back at any level that he's been at. He's, you know, been an outstanding player every step of the way. And now at the University of Michigan, I think the game's a little bit tougher. I think they've also probably asked him to be a little bit more conservative with some of the chances that he takes. But when he turns it on, he is very difficult to stop. Last night, you know, they were trailing big time in Madison against the Wisconsin Badgers, and actually lost the game pretty badly. But he was only on the ice for one goal against, and it was an empty netter. But it seemed like every time he was out there, he was kind of driving the offense. I mean, he really drives possession. And you know, I don't want to make the Erik Karlsson comparison that's being really thrown around a lot with this draft class and each of the skilled defensemen. But he does, you know, control the game when he's on the ice a bit more than your average, you know, freshman defenseman in college hockey. I don't think I've ever really seen a defenseman that has that much control. Now, that said, he likes to take risks. He last night, as they were trailing big, he decided to go for a little bit of a skate and actually made it all the way to the goal. And unfortunately, they had a goal disallowed because he ended up interfering with the goalie. But that's how much we had to get through about three guys to make that happen first. So just to see him get through like that, it was pretty impressive. I think they probably would like to see him, maybe take some shorter shifts and maybe not rush up as much or as deep into the zone. But he's got a fantastic skater too. So that really helps him get back. But I think the thing that continues to impress me is that when he is on the ice, Michigan is a completely different team offensively. They don't have a very deep blue line. They don't have a lot of guys that can drive play like Quinn Hughes does. And to see a true freshman doing that is pretty impressive to me. And it's something that I think is very rare and a big reason why I think so highly of him for this draft class.
Chris, Swedish defenseman Adam Bockfist, he's lesser known than Rasmus Dahlin, who everyone knows is the consensus number one rated prospect right now. Why does Bockfist fit the mold of what NHL teams are currently looking for in a defenseman?
Yeah, well, it's very similar to Quinn Hughes. It's all about puck movement and the ability to get the puck up ice quickly, the ability to control the puck and make good decisions with it. And I think that's what he does. Very offensive minded. He's playing at the U20 level mostly in Sweden. They've given him a couple looks at the pro level this year, but I think they're allowing him to just kind of continue to be confident with the puck at the U20 level, and he's been an almost a point per game player. And that's pretty impressive to me. So, in the international tournaments, I see mostly the Ivan Hlinka and mostly on video. He's very similar to Hughes in that he controls the puck. The team is far better with him on the ice than they are without him. He's getting the puck up ice quickly to the forwards. He can make that long stretch pass, but he can also use his feet very well. He's got good mobility. And again, he's an undersized defenseman. That's kind of one of the themes with this draft class. There's a lot of undersized, guys that are sub 6 feet tall, that can really play offensively and move the puck extraordinarily well. And to me, Boqvist is one of these guys that is, so he just plays the style that the teams are playing. They all have these defensemen now. We're seeing guys like Shane Gostis there, Zach Werenski, who's a bigger size, but guys that can rush the puck up ice. And obviously everybody points again to Erik Karlsson when we talk about Boqvist because of the undersized nature. And I think he has that ability. I don't know if his top end is going to be there, but when he has the puck on his stick, he can do a lot of special things. And I think teams are really taking notice of that.
Chris, you have a Czech right winger, Filip Zadina, ranked number 5 on your list. He has 30 points in 21 games so far for the Halifax Mooseheads in the QMJHL. Because of his pure skill, is Zadina a player who could creep up into the top 3?
Yeah, I think absolutely. I think if teams are a little bit scared off by the size of guys like Hughes and Boqvist, they could very well go ahead and go with Zadina first. And Zadina, he's a late 99. We're seeing him kind of do things that we would expect an 18-year-old. He'll be 18 in a couple of weeks here, to do in the QMJHL. His points per game is very similar to that of Nico Hischier last year, though Hischier is a bit younger. At the same point, so I think that he's one of those guys where we're going to see him continue to play in things like the World Juniors and those tournaments where he's really going to be one of those standout players. If the Czechs are going to lean on him very heavily, they've done better internationally. They won the Ivan Hlinka with him last year. So that's a team that it'll be interesting to watch. And I think Zadina is going to be one of those guys that just everybody's got their eyes on him because of the skill that he has. And to see what he's doing in the queue, not necessarily surprised based on what we've seen from him internationally and over in the Czech Republic. He's got good size. He gets to the middle of the ice very well. Very deliberate in his ability to kind of, move the puck offensively. Really good release as well. So, he's got all the offensive skills. And so if you're, if there's a team that's teetering on, should we go D or should we go forward? It's close. I think in most situations, the tiebreaker goes to the forward in that one, that high in the draft at least. And so I think if it comes down to that, he very well could sneak into the top 3. I debated putting him at 3rd over both of those other defensemen as well, but ultimately decided that you know, this theme of defense is going to be one that kind of plays throughout the first round. And teams are not going to necessarily want to wait around to pick up a defenseman because there are so many good ones available this year.
Chris Peters joins us on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Chris is with ESPN.com. He's their prospects expert. Chris, Oliver Wahlstrom is a right winger for the U.S. National Team Development Program. On your list, you have him ranked 9th, but you think he's one of the best natural goal scorers in the draft. Does he have upside because of that natural goal scoring ability?
Yeah, I think he does, and there's a lot of room for his game to grow. You know, I was talking to one of the scouts that I speak with pretty regularly, and he's been watching Wahlstrom for a few years now, and he wants to see him add a little bit more deception to his, you know, his one-on-one game. He doesn't often beat a lot of guys, even though he's got the skill to do it. It's just a matter of figuring out how. And one of the things that I think is so impressive about Wahlstrom is his release. He's got a lot of different release points. He likes to, you know, shoot from pretty much everywhere. He's averaging almost 5 shots a game with the U18s this year, based on their internal stats. So, you know, that's pretty incredible to see that he's able to do that. You know, where in both the USHL and against college teams, it's not easy to get those opportunities, but he's just got that ability and the confidence to shoot from wherever, and he's confused a lot of goalies with his release, so I think that's a really good sign as well. You know, but as I mentioned, it's all about kind of finding other ways to generate more offense. I think he's an incredibly skilled young man. He's been kind of on everybody's radar for a long time. He actually had a viral video when he was, I think, 11 years old. You know, and he was on like morning talk shows and all this other stuff because of this incredible goal that he had on YouTube. And it's just to see that kid continue on and to really grow into an incredible prospect. It's been kind of fun to watch, and he also played, you know, he's been a part of USA Hockey for several years now. He played the Youth Olympics where they won gold, actually ended up getting hurt and couldn't play in the championship game. But every step of the way, you know, through playing as U18s as an underager, you know, he's got a chance to potentially make the World Junior team this year. I don't know if he will, but I think he's got an opportunity to be in the mix. You know, there is a lot of skill there, and I think there's a lot of people that are very excited about Oliver Wahlstrom.
Chris, do you see a lot of similarities between the 2018 draft class and the 2012 draft class? That was kind of known as the year of the defenseman. You saw 8 defensemen go in the top 10, including Ryan Murray at 2nd overall. Morgan Riley went 5th overall. And, of course, Jacob Trouba went 9th overall that year.
Yeah, you know, this is – I think so. I think this year it's just kind of – it's kind of different because we've got so many D that are – you know, that are undersized, and you know, so it's not necessarily the same type of defenseman in 2012 where it's this year. It's more like these are the type of D that play the style that the NHL is just kind of going towards, where it's all about quick up the ice. It's all about, you know, puck movement. It's all about D jumping into the rush and having guys like Erik Karlsson and Brent Burns that can be almost an extra forward on the ice. You know, there are a lot of guys like that. 'Cause in addition to, you know, Quinn Hughes and Adam Boqvist and obviously Rasmus Dahlin, you've got guys like Ryan Merkley, incredibly skilled. You got the WHL guys like Kalen Addison, Ty Smith. These guys are really, really skilled players, and they play, a lot of them are very, very similar, but then there's also guys like Bodey Wild, it's more about his athleticism and his skating ability, and he's actually putting up points this year too. So he's having a big step forward. And then you've got other guys like Jet Wu, who plays more of a physical style. He's not a very big guy, but he's stout, and he can play the physical game, and he's decent offensively. You know, another good skater has, you know, can get up, and Jared McIsaac. I mean, there are so many names in this draft right now. We're just like, wow, you know, if you're looking for defense, this is a great year to have, you know, a top 15 pick, because you're going to have a really good selection of players that are there. And then even if you're in the second half of the draft, you've got some guys with enough upside where you're like, you take a chance on them. You know, maybe they can kind of develop into one of these players. So yeah, I think that this is going to be a year where we could see as many as, you know, 15 defensemen taken in the first round. I think that's probably an aggressive number. I don't know if it necessarily would be like that, but there are a lot of really good defensemen this year and a very diverse set of defensemen, but it's all about those guys that can really get up the ice and move the puck well, because that's the exciting thing to me, is to see those players that are just super skilled.
Chris, last weekend, Team USA defeated Canada Red 6-4 to win the World Under-17 Hockey Challenge gold medal. The Americans went undefeated in the tournament. Was this really a coming-out party for Jack Hughes, who led the tournament with 15 points in six games and is projected to be number one overall?
I think so. I think that this is, you know, his announcement to the hockey world that he's arrived. And he's been a kid that people have been aware of. He's Quinn Hughes' younger brother, but I think eventually we're probably going to know Quinn as Jack's brother, which is saying a lot because Quinn will probably be a top five pick. But you look at what Jack was able to do. He had 14 points in the under-17s, 4 points off the record, which was set by Colin White a few years ago, and as many points as Ilya Kovalchuk had in the same tournament. Excuse me. So, you know, to see what Jack Hughes has been able to do since he's come to the National Team Development Program and just to completely dominate at the USHL level. I think he'll probably end up getting called up to the under-18 team. I have to check. I'm not 100% positive that he'll be eligible to play in the under-18 championship because of citizenship issues, since he is a dual citizen and had grown up mostly in Canada, despite being born in Orlando, Florida. So we'll have to see. I actually haven't checked in on that, but that's something that I'll be interested to find out if there's some rules about, you know, being in the country for 2 years before you can represent them internationally. So we'll have to check on that. But at tournaments like the Under-17 Challenge, that they don't have those requirements. So that's why we saw him just absolutely dominate for this U.S. team. Now, the interesting thing is that U-17 team, you think about all the great players that have come through the National Team Development Program. I had multiple scouts tell me that this might be the best under-17 team they've ever had, and that is an incredible thing to say, because especially lately there have been a lot of first-round draft picks and a lot of high-profile players, Austin Matthews, Matthew Tkachuk, you know, the list goes on and on and on of these guys that have come through that program. So if Jack Hughes is a leader of that, one of the best teams ever, you know, I think we are absolutely going to see him contend. Obviously, a long time to go between now and the 2019 draft, but I think teams are already looking forward to what he is going to do over these next 2 years and what a talent he is.
Last one for you, Chris, and we always appreciate your time on this Saturday morning. We're about 5 weeks away from the World Junior Hockey Championship kicking off right around Christmas and Boxing Day in Buffalo. From your long-term perspective, is it shaping up to be a gold medal rematch between Canada and the United States?
Yeah, you know, I think they're going to be really good. There's going to be a lot of great players in this tournament. I think both with the number of returnees that they have, with the number of guys that they can add from, you know, that are a bit younger, I think it's going to be really impressive. I think Canada is going to be very heavy on 19-year-olds this year, which is, you know, a good sign. If you have 19-year-olds that are good enough to lead your team, you take as many as you can. That little extra year of development really does matter. And I think for the U.S., they're going to have to go a little bit younger than that. So we'll have to see, you know, how that happens, who gets added. Getting Kaylor Yamamoto back from the Edmonton Oilers is a big one for them, because he's probably going to be on their top line. So, you know, there are certainly a lot of different things that are happening. But Canada's getting guys back like McLeod and Owen Tippett. You know, there are a lot of players that they can add to. So I would say, though, you also have to watch out. Sorry, a little dry today. You also have to watch out for Russia, Finland, and Sweden. I think that they've got some really talented players in this group, in this age group, that are going to challenge. And even the Czech Republic with some of the guys that they're going to be able to add. So I think it's going to be a very deep tournament this year. But absolutely, to me, the favorites going in are the U.S. and Canada. And boy, wouldn't it be great to see a U.S.-Canada rematch in Buffalo. That'd be a lot of fun.
It certainly would be. Chris Peters covers prospects in the world of hockey for ESPN.com. Chris, always appreciate your time. Thanks very much for joining us this morning.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Our pleasure, Chris. We'll do it again real soon. Let's head to break. When we come back, one final segment. We'll talk about the Jets and the Devils. We'll get you set for the rest of the day. Tee up the action here on TSN 1290. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
One final segment Saturday morning here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Big thank you to all our guests that joined us this morning. Right in the first hour, Mike McIntyre of the Winnipeg Free Press, Adam Vingan of the Tennessean, also joined by Amanda Stein, of course, Alex Pruitt of Sports Illustrated, and then Chris Peters of ESPN.com. In case you missed any of those interviews, in case you missed any of the program, it's available for download via our website. You can subscribe
it
to the show.
It will be available.
It will be available in about probably within the hour,
yes.
Right? Okay, there you go. And you can always subscribe to the show. It'll come straight to your device each and every week. That's the easiest way to do it. That way you don't even have to think about it. Just subscribe once and always enjoy the Illegal Curve Hockey Show right on your device without you having to do anything whatsoever.
You know, we always love having Chris Peters on
yeah.
to talk about the world of prospects. He mentioned Jet Wu,
yeah.
who's from Winnipeg.
Great name.
Great name. His dad was actually the head coach of the Kelvin hockey team when I was in high school.
You didn't play for that team, did you?
This is how old I am now. Uh-huh. Jet Wu was born right after I graduated high school, about a month later.
Wow.
Wow. You are old.
17 years ago.
Wow. You're really getting up there in age. I'm the most impressive thing, that, as far as I'm concerned, is that you graduated high school. I wasn't sure that that actually happened or not.
You know, in all seriousness, though, Jet Wu is projected to go in the first round, and he's had a great start to the season. 17 points in 18 games so far for the Moose Jaw Warriors.
No doubt about it. So a prospect to keep an eye on, another stable of talent from Winnipeg here. The Jets and the Devils. There's, of course, the Travis Zajac connection. He'll be in the lineup for the Devils later on this afternoon, as those two teams will do a puck drop at 2 o'clock. Game you can hear live on TSN 1290. Munsey and Paul Edmonds with the call, and then also available on TSN 3 this afternoon. Dennis Bayak and Trevor Kidd with the call, as the Jets look to put a bow on this homestand, wrap up the 3-game homestand with a victory, and make it 4 games in a row with a victory for the Jets.
Is Trevor going to have his goalie pads on while he's doing color?
That would be awkward. I would be surprised if he would. That seems like an odd decision that for him to make. But, you know, you'd have to ask him, or I guess we'll see on the broadcast shortly after 2 o'clock this afternoon.
You know, Drew, I'm very excited for this afternoon's game. And it's not just because the Jets and Devils have identical 11-4-2 records. It's because I think you're going to see speed and skill on display from both teams. It's going to be a much faster game than I think we saw on Thursday night between the Flyers. The Flyers are a little bit more of a kind of grind you down low type of team, a much more physical team, I would say, than the Devils. And, you know, Will Butcher has been a revelation on defense for the Devils. Nico Hischier, you know, has been, you know, what you would expect him to be as the first overall pick. He's had a great start to the season. And just up and down the lineup, Taylor Hall's playing really well. And, you know, it's always nice to see Corey Schneider come back to the arena where really he began his pro career. So
absolutely.
You know, it should be one of those games, you know, even though those afternoon games, you know, sometimes can start off a little bit slow.
Mm-hmm.
You know, with all the speed and skill that these two teams have, it should be a great one.
Well, it'll be interesting from the Jets' perspective, because they really haven't been utilizing their speed a ton this year. I mean, that's sort of what has been one of the takeaways, especially if you look at the, you know, advanced stats. I'm trying to think of the Sean Tierney from Charting Hockey, when we had him on the show a couple weeks ago, as he sort of talked about how slow the Jets have been playing, and how that's sort of bizarre given the amount of skill and talent they have on their roster, that it's sort of counterintuitive that they'd be playing such a slow style. So it'll be interesting to see how the Jets match up against a fast team like the Devils. I mean, last time they played a fast team, that was the Vegas Golden Knights, who were really fast and aggressive. The Jets had some trouble against them. That's it for this Saturday morning in the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. A big thank you to our sponsors, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, Linden Market Dental Center, Bernstein's Deli, Zapia Group Realty, and Keener Jerseys. Support these fine local businesses because they support Illegal Curve Hockey. Quick programming note, no NHL this week. This week is, of course, the Jets and the Kings will do battle on Wednesday. So we're back next Saturday at 9 a.m. to get you set for the Jets and the Sharks. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news is IllegalCurve.com. Big props to producer Alex. For Dave Minuk, for Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mandel. If it's Saturday, it's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.